is Corolla Digital.
This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus. With Hulu Plus, you get total control to watch thousands of shows wherever you want, whenever you want. Binge on full seasons and watch your favorite current shows like Community, South Park, SNL, and more. Right now, my listeners can get an extended free trial of Hulu Plus by going to HuluPlus.com/Larry. That's HuluPlus.com/Larry. From Level 5 City in Glendale, it's This Week with Larry Miller. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who loves movies about Dad. Hi, folks, and welcome back to This Week with Larry Miller. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And you know something? Again, I know I say this every week, and I will every week, because that music makes me so happy. It puts a big grin on my face. Every week, I just love to listen to those guys. And, of course, that's the Brad Kerr Orchestra and the Tammy Rector Dancers featuring boy tenor Don Graham, asking the musical question, why is my belly button lint always a different color than my shirt? Well, Don, I'll tell you what, I think that's a fair question. And Colonel Jeff found that question that you wrote in, and he said, what do you think of this one? And I said, I think that's a fair question. Why is Don's belly button lint always a different color than his shirt? Or anyone's, of course, but it seems somehow better to just put it off on him. But you know what? That's a pretty good question. Why is the belly button lint? First of all, the phrase belly button lint has always puzzled me. It's a little odd, I think. Lint is a little odd for anything that comes into or out of the body. I mean, lint is, well, it's something from a mattress cover, isn't it? It's something from a sock that just got out of the dryer, but belly button lint. All right. I'm not trying to be gross about this. It's the lint from the belly button. And Don wants to know, why is his belly button lint always a different color than his shirt? And again, that's a fair question. I don't know why. And you began to think, first of all, and I began to talk about this with Colonel Jeff and with Dr. Chris. We began to wonder, well, why is there still a belly button? Colonel Jeff said, can we close belly buttons? Can they be closed in a small in-office surgery in a doctor's office? And I said, and I still think, well, I guess you ought to be able to. Now, doesn't that seem like something that we could get done? Then we discussed this. First of all, there are no holes in the body, zero holes in the body that don't do something. For instance, the holes in the ears obviously take sound in, and the hole in the mouth, of course, it lets words and stories out and takes food in, and the holes in the nose, everything does something, and there are other holes, of course, that just lets things out. You know which ones they are. You don't need me to paint you a picture of that, and what a picture that would be. But The belly button is, at least to my, unless there are holes that I'm missing, then I always thought, wouldn't that be weird of just holes that we didn't know about, like behind the ears? But anyway, the point is the belly button does, I think, nothing. And the colonel and the doctor felt that same thing, that they didn't think it did anything either. It doesn't let something in and it doesn't let something out. It's not still attached to anything by the umbilical cord. I feel pretty sharp knowing that word, by the way. But it doesn't really do anything, and it's just a hole that doesn't heal. The second you're born, of course, the umbilical cord gets cut, right? And then it gets, what, tied up or something? And put in there. Something happens that's a very official doctor's thing. It's been very official for thousands of years, forever. And yet then the hole just stays there. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't heal up. And, well, we think that's wrong. So we checked it out. Colonel Jeff went right onto the computer there and found that there are, well, he said, people are closing it a lot because there are many, many operations, there are many books, there are many, many ideas to have that you can get it closed. And one of them is, the official word is the umbiloplasty. That's the word that means you get it cut, closed, something or other. We didn't read into these things because, let's be honest, who wants to? But that was kind of interesting that you can get it closed. And then we thought, well, it would be a little creepy if you saw someone who had it closed. I mean, if you see, for instance, a beautiful girl walking down the beach in a bikini without a belly button, well, that would give you something to walk over and talk about, wouldn't it? Excuse me, I hate to bother you, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but did you forget your belly button this morning when you left the house? Did you forget to tape it on? But there are sometimes, aren't there models, like famous international models? By the way, I don't even know what the word international means there. We've had so many words we use for models now. An international model. A supermodel. I don't know why super, how much more super can a model be than a gorgeous model? If you think someone's gorgeous, hey, she's beautiful. Well, she's not a supermodel. Well, she is. She actually is. I'll be the judge of that. And yes, she is. She's on the cover of Vogue here. And I think she's as super as anyone gets. But what happens? What happens to the navel? And what happens to the belly button? Why is it the navel, by the way? And I guess if you're a student of belly buttons, you could say you're enrolled in the Naval Academy. I feel like slapping myself for that one, but you know what? It's a cute joke, and cute goes a long way in comedy, my friends. So in any case, to Don Graham, boy tenor Don Graham this week, why is my belly button lint always a different color than my shirt? You got me. I don't know. It's a cute question, and it's a tiny, tiny bit creepy, but just a tiny bit. And I think it's a very cute question, and I have no idea. I don't know why things gather there. It doesn't go anywhere into the body. It stops. Why is that a hole that doesn't heal? You got me. That's one of those things. It could be like when you open a new bar or a new restaurant, even if you've owned 10 other bars and restaurants in that city, still you forget and your manager forgets always something that should be obvious. You know, like busboy trays, the gray trays, anything at all, like holders for napkins, things that should be obvious are always forgotten. So when we get to the other side of life, one of the questions I think it could be good to ask is when God sits us down and says and has a gigantic file in front of him with your name on it, and just before he says, well, let me ask you a few questions, each one of us could jump in first and say, before that, I have a question for you. What's the deal with belly buttons not healing? Now, if we all do this, if we all agree to do this with God, I just want to make sure that a couple of you can get back with your results before we move on, if there was a way, like via Houdini, to get the message back here of saying, you know what, he really doesn't like that joke. And so you can not do it. I've paid the price for you here on that. In any case, though, you know, I think it's a terrific question, and I really enjoy all the questions you send in. Please keep doing that, all of you out there. We all do here, and we're all really glad that that one of you becomes everything every week, the orchestra leader, the dance leader, and, of course, the boy tenor with the musical question. And by the way, we've had some very, very good feedback, a good running argument in a way with what we did. It was last week, right? The question was, for the boy tenor that time, was, would you rather fight 100 B-sized bears or, no, yes, 100 B-sized bears or one bear-sized bee? Now, how good can a musical question be if you can't even say it? And I'm the host! But that was a pretty good question. I thought we had fun with that. Would you rather fight 100 bee-sized bears or one bear-sized bee? And the concept of the bear-sized bee was horrifying to me because I don't think anyone really likes bees a lot or needs to like them a lot. And thinking of one as big as a bear, where the stinger is like a medieval sword. But we got people writing in to each other. One guy wrote in and said, it's the bee-sized bears you want, the 100 little ones. If he wrote in and said, if you have 100 bee-sized bears, they're easy to take care of because you just open a can of salmon and that'll keep them busy. Now, I don't know this to be true. I said to Colonel Jeff, what does that even mean? And he said, well, you know that bears like salmon. I said, I don't know that. Why would I know that? How would I know that? All I know is if you see a bear, I don't want to know what he's eating as long as he's not eating me. But then he said, no, bears do that. They stand up there on the side of the raging river as the salmon are going upstream to spawn. Spawn is a terrific word, by the way. I wish we had a word like that. That wasn't dirty at all. It sounds like a great act of nature. But they're going upstream to spawn, and as they jump out of each wave to hit the next wave, Colonel Jeff said that, well, you know, 9 times out of 10, there's a gigantic bear standing on the rock next to them, just, well, reaches out and grabs the salmon out of the air, and then, well, that's about it for the salmon. That's the bear doesn't do anything like take the salmon to a movie. He just eats it right there. And I thought that was pretty cold of the bear to do, by the way. Well, the guys, you know, just trying to have some kids. Could let him go. I mean, it was just Father's Day. Leave the guy alone. He's just trying to go upstream. I mean, we're all trying to go upstream in a way. That's a metaphor for all of us, isn't it? But this guy wrote in saying, that's the one you want. You want the bee-sized bears because 100 of them can be kept very calm with one can of salmon. I thought, I said to the colonel, then don't they, you know, wouldn't they kill each other even though they're only bee-sized? You open a can of salmon, there are 100 of them. They're not going to be polite, are they? And say, oh, sorry, Jim, go ahead. You go first. So in any case, though, this guy thought it was the bee-sized bears. And then someone else wrote to him saying, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. You want a bear-sized bee. You want one bear-sized bee. And this guy said that he works with bees. He's a bee guy. What do they call that? Where they keep them all in a... Oh, bee... Colonel Jeff just typed in... They know me at this point. Colonel Jeff just typed in under the screen, keeper. He's a keeper. He's a beekeeper. But this guy wrote in that he's a beekeeper, and he knows that nothing is sweeter than bees. They're very nice to get along with, and that if you get one bear-sized bee, you could really tame him easily. And I respect this point of view, by the way, although I have to be honest, it sounded a little on the stupid side to me, because at that point, a bear-sized bee, to tame, well, I think to tame anything the size of a bear, never mind bears, if it's just the size of a bear, I think that's got to give you pause. In any case, though, we had some very good comments coming back, and so please keep writing great, great musical questions for us and sending them in to our website, which is LarryMillerPodcast.com. And we'll love talking about them, and I'll love reading them. And so thank you very much. And by Hulu Plus. That's right, Hulu Plus. We are brought to you by Hulu Plus. Now, you may wonder, what is Hulu Plus? then you're lucky you're listening to me, because I can tell you, you've tried streaming hit shows on your PC on Hulu.com. Now it's time to start your free trial. Get the word free in there. That's an important word. Your free trial of exclusive content in your living room and on your mobile devices on Hulu Plus. With Hulu Plus, see, what you get is total control to watch thousands of shows wherever you want, whenever you want. Use Hulu Plus on connected TVs, game consoles, Blu-ray players, Roku, Apple TV, PC, or watch from anywhere on your smartphone or tablet on demand at all times. And with Hulu Plus, you can binge. I love that word binge every time I say it. You can binge on full seasons, watch your favorite current shows, and even full series runs of classic TV shows. It's endless. It all sounds pretty good, by the way. They've got The Office, Modern Family, Community, Glee, and more. And now you're wondering, since you're interested, now you're saying, all right, but how much is this going to set me back? Here's how much. Once again, lucky you're listening to me. Hulu Plus is only $7.99 per month. Now, that's pretty good for whatever it is, unless, of course, you're a bear-sized bee. But never mind that now. Hulu Plus is only $7.99 per month, but right now they're offering an extended free trial of Hulu Plus that is only available to podcast listeners. And guess what? You're sitting there right now. This is a podcast. And what are you doing? You're listening to it. That makes you a podcast listener. You're in line for Hulu Plus. Take control of your TV watching experience. Go to HuluPlus.com/Larry for your extended free trial. Again, go to HuluPlus.com/Larry for an extended free trial. I know I've said this before, but it's so much fun saying something like that with your own name at the end of it. So remember, that's HuluPlus.com/Larry for an extended free trial. That's pretty good. I'm glad those guys are a sponsor. And they're not the only one, though, because we have And by Amazon. That's right, And by Amazon. Amazon has been with us and we with them a long time, and we're very happy about it. As you know, you go to Amazon on your computer, on your device, on anything you have, and you order anything in the world you want, right? Wrong! Wrong! You don't! You're wrong! You're not right! You're wrong! What you do is not go to Amazon. What you do is go to our website. And as you know, if you've been listening, our website is LarryMillerPodcast.com. LarryMillerPodcast.com. And you know what, though? You go there, and we have a banner that says Amazon on that. You click our banner that says Amazon on our podcast, and it takes you to Amazon instantly. And it takes you in the best way to Amazon, and then you order anything in the world you want. Anything that comes into your head, anything you can cook up in your own imagination is available on Amazon. And this time, though, when you order it, Amazon's happy, you're happy, and we're happy over here because Amazon sends us a percentage of whatever you buy. Now, that's pretty great for everyone involved. In fact, I'll be honest, never mind Amazon, never mind you. It's pretty good for us. So why don't we start with that? This whole deal is very good, though. So you know what? Go to Amazon. You can get anything you can possibly think of, except, of course, an actual Amazon. You cannot get an actual Amazon because they don't exist. But I always love putting this in because it's true. If you get an actual Amazon, if you order from Amazon on Amazon.com on our website, if you go to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com, and press the Amazon banner, and then go to order anything in the world you want, and if it's delivered by a very tall, muscular, gorgeous, willing woman from the Amazon, what you do is you don't say, "Hi, what a coincidence, come on in." You say, "One second, wait right there. Call us, and we will come out." That's right. Colonel Jeff, Dr. Chris, and I will immediately come to your home, and we will make friends with the Amazon, and we will take her to our laboratory here just to make sure she's on the up and up and we're on the up and up. And then we'll let you know what happens, unless it goes really well. And then I'm afraid you'll have to guess. So in any case, we're very happy about them. Those are two great sponsors, Hulu Plus and Amazon. And you get Amazon on our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com. So that puts us in, frankly, a great mood for the joke of the week. That's right. This is one of my favorite parts of the show, the joke of the week, where I always put in a joke, and sometimes it comes from the 100 best jokes list that Colonel Jeff got off the internet. And this time it came from Dr. Chris, who said, you know, I just heard a good joke, and see if you like it. If you like this one, tell it today. And you know what? I liked it. Colonel Jeff liked it. So I'm telling it today, okay? Here we go with the joke of the week. A Buddhist monk goes to a new barbershop to get his head shaved. And as Dr. Chris pointed out, that's a pretty good first sentence for a joke. A Buddhist monk goes to a new barbershop to get his head shaved, and it's a very good shave. The barber gives him a beautiful shave, and the Buddhist monk says to him, you know what? This is a terrific shave. Thank you. I'm glad I came in here. How much do I owe you? And the barber says, you know what? You've been so nice, and you're a holy man, a religious man. There's no charge today. Thank you for coming in. Just go in peace and go off and do your Buddhist monk work. And the guy was very touched. He said, how do you like that? So the barber comes to work the next day, and what do you think he sees? In front of his door is there a dozen shiny jewels. That's right, from the Buddhist monk. A dozen shiny, not diamonds and emeralds and things, but beautiful ones. Oh, the ones that, well, you'd never wear yourself, like turquoise. But let's be honest, they're beautiful. And it was very nice. Oh, how do you like that? The barber says to himself, how do you like that? The Buddhist monk, just in return as a gesture, gave me a dozen shiny Buddhist jewels. And he thought that was really neat. The next day, a priest walks in, and the priest needs a haircut and a shave, and the barber gives him a great haircut and a great shave, and the priest says to him, well, thank you. How much do I owe you? And the barber says, you know what, Father? Don't worry about it. Go off and do good work today. You're a holy man, and bring good things to the world, and just be a terrific priest, and thank you for coming in. And the priest says, that's awfully nice of you. Thanks very much. And he leaves. The next morning, the barber comes back to work. What do you think he finds in front of his door again? Now it's a dozen bottles of holy wine from the church that the priest wanted to bring as a little gift. And the barber said, how do you like that? That's terrific. A dozen bottles of wine here, and well, how do you like that? The Buddhist monk gave me a dozen jewels, and the priest gave me, well, a dozen bottles of wine. That's awfully nice, because he wasn't doing it to get anything. He was doing it to be nice anyway. The next day, an Orthodox rabbi, Rabbi Finkelstein, comes into the barber shop, and he needs a little trim on his beard, and he needs a little trim on the payas, sideburns there. And the barber gives him a terrific job. Again, just right. He doesn't look any different, really, but it's just so much neater. It's so much better. And the rabbi says to him, well, thank you very much. What do I owe you? And the barber says, you know what? You are a holy man. Go out in the world and do great work. You don't owe me anything. And just thanks for coming in. Thanks very much. And the next day, in front of his door, the barber comes to work and sees 12 more rabbis. That was fun to tell. I think you were right bringing that one in, Chris. That was just, and that's, as again, that's a kind of joke that the old name for it is a Shaggy Dog story, because you can tell it and you can enlarge it in any way. Not too far. You never go too far. But it's fun to say, well, how do you like that? This guy brought these jewels. This guy brought these bottles of wine. And in fact, we changed it to bottles of wine, because in the original joke, it said that the priest brings him 12 roses, which fits into the joke, but it just doesn't sound so exciting. It felt a little lame, a little limp. So we put our heads together here, And we thought, well, it should be a dozen gold coins, a dozen silver coins, a dozen something. And then we thought, you know what? A dozen bottles of wine will do it. No labels. They're made in the basement there. And but that's a pretty good joke for the joke of the week. I hope you liked it. Which leads us to another favorite part of the show for me, the Poetry Corner. That's right, the Poetry Corner. The Corner of Poetry. This is something I've always wanted to do on a show like this, on radio or TV, or the great podcasting world that I love so much. And it's to bring poetry back into the world in small ways, to let everyone know, including myself, that poetry is a beautiful form. It's not a stuffy form. It's not something where you really don't want to do it. But we've, for the last 10, 20 years, we've all been taught that poetry doesn't matter. It doesn't have to rhyme. Doesn't have to mean anything. It can be stupid images. It doesn't really matter. And no one likes it anymore. But when you go to the greatest poets in history, there is really such a moving way they use words. And it's very meaningful to hear them. And I hope you like this. This is a good one. It's one of Colonel Jeff's favorites. It's from the great William Blake, by William Blake, and it's called A Poison Tree. Here we go. I was angry with my friend. I told my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe. I told it not. My wrath did grow, and I watered it in fears, night and morning with my tears, and I sunned it with smiles and with soft, deceitful wiles, and it grew both day and night till it bore an apple bright, and my foe beheld it shine, and he knew that it was mine, and into my garden stole when the night had veiled the pole. In the morning, glad, I see my foe outstretched beneath the tree. Well, that's a pretty good poem, isn't it? And as always, a nice cheerful ending. The foe is stretched out dead. But you know what? That's just a beautiful use of language and a beautiful question of what do you give to yourself? What do you water in your own soul? And how nice. I was angry with my friend, and I told my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe, I told it not, my wrath did grow. So, boy, that William Blake is terrific. He was born around 1750 and died in 1827, I think it was. And one of those funny things, too, because it said he lived his entire life in London, except for 3 years in Feltham. Now, that's the name of the place, F-E-L-P-H-A-M. That's one of those things you read and you want to say, really, Feltham? You had to move somewhere for 3 years and you picked Feltham? He didn't start a business there. It wasn't that he had family there. It wasn't that his girlfriend was there. There was nothing there, but he went to Feltham. And if you or I went to Feltham from London in 1780, and you know what? I think we'd all agree. We'd stay in Feltham for a nice weekend, and then we'd say, I believe I've seen enough of Feltham. I think I'm going to go back to regular London. See if I can meet an Amazon. So in any case, though, William Blake, the great William Blake, and that's a nifty poem. That's a good poem. Thank you, Colonel. A Poison Tree. But in a way, the way that man looks at love and the way that man looks at his own soul, this brings us into the right place, because it was just Father's Day, and I enjoyed watching, well, there was some great Father's Day movies on, well, I guess, a lot of the old movie channels, and they're wonderful movies. They make you feel good, and there are so many movies that were made about fathers, or sometimes you don't see the father in the movie, but the character in it is very moved his whole life to talk about his father and to think about his father, and to think about the things they did right, the things they did wrong. And as we discussed already, Field of Dreams is a classic example of this. Oh, his father, well, I said this to my dad, and we never had a chance to settle it. It's, of course, a wonderful movie on so many counts. But you know what? The movie that came into that I love thinking about and I love talking about and has so many wonderful magic movie moments in it is To Kill a Mockingbird. It's based on the great book by Harper Lee, and I think she published it somewhere around 1960, something like that, 62, and it was instantly very popular. And it's a beautiful book, by the way. I finally read To Kill a Mockingbird just about 5 years ago for the first time after seeing the movie 100 times. It didn't hurt the movie, and it didn't hurt anything. It was a beautiful read. But, oh my, that movie, starring the great Gregory Peck, and as I just said to the Colonel before, that fellow was great in every part he did. He played some bad guys, he played some good guys, but he was always just great. But there was one part he was born for, and one part that was born for him, and that was as Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, and he was so good in it. There were great, great actors and actresses in the whole movie. And it's so by the way, we checked on this, that it turns out it's Robert Duvall's first movie, which is nice to know. And it's a great movie. If you've never seen it, sit down and watch it sometime. If you've seen it 50 times, sit down and watch it again when it comes on. And boy, oh boy, that Gregory Peck, when he's a father, you see, who is just trying so hard. He's a father who takes his responsibilities seriously. He wants to raise his children well. He wants to be a good member of his own family and the people who work for him and in his neighborhood and in his community and in his city. And he's a great trial lawyer, and he does such a good job in this part. And it's so well written and so well made. And as I said before, the movie has great magic moments. But there's one that I've thought about before, and, well, it moves me every time. Atticus puts his children to bed, and then the young sister, he leaves the room, and the young sister says to her brother, Jem, she says to him, do you remember Mom at all? Because their mother passed away, and the mother died when the little girl was, oh, I think 5 or 6. And she said, you can't remember her mom at all. And the brother says, oh, sure, I remember her. She was great. And she, you know, you really cared about her. You loved her. And they're talking about their mom. And then the camera more or less takes you outside the room, which is on the first floor. It's just a simple house. And, well, on the balcony, listening to them is Gregory Peck, is Atticus Finch sitting on, well, one of those chairs on a chain, and he's just sitting there, not listening to them. I mean, he just sat down outside to be outside in the night air. But he's sitting there, and you just know in a second that's where he used to sit with his wife. And you can see that he's not overacting it, but you can see he's touched listening to his children talk about their mother, his wife, and he's sitting in the same spot with the same space next to him with his arm stretched out the way she sat with him. And it's a great movie moment. It's a great magic movie moment because you realize how touching it is to be able to know this character is thinking and feeling just what he ought to be. And the whole movie is great before that. The whole movie is great after that. The story it tells and the journey it takes us on is so wonderful. But to see just from that moment, you can tell everything you ever need to know about those children and that man. And, well, that's what makes it a magic movie moment to me. And what a perfect timing it is for the whole concept of Father's Day, because it has that great narration when the little girl has become a grown-up woman now. And I love that she calls him Atticus for some reason instead of Daddy. I just love, and Atticus always said this, and Atticus always said that. It's a wonderful movie. It's beautiful on many, many counts and tells a story that, oh, that's brand new every time you see it. Doesn't matter where we were or where we are or where we will be. That story is great forever. So it's great for every Father's Day. It's great any other time in the year. But if you don't know, well, if you don't know that one, if you don't know To Kill a Mockingbird, try to get to know it as soon as you can. You won't be sorry you did. And it reminded me also then of, well, my dad, because I was saying to the colonel, he said, why don't you tell a story about your kids, about you being a father? And I said to him, and I think we all agreed that it doesn't seem exactly right to talk about yourself as a dad. It seems like something your own kids ought to do. My kids, in, well, not today necessarily, but in 10 or 20 years or more. And my kids gave me for Father's Day this year, it was just great. They went out and got an apple pie at one of our local apple pie stores, Marie Callender's here. And they got two cards, and they filled out the card with such nice thoughts. They're children, and it's very meaningful to read these things. It really touched me. And I won't tell you any more. It's personal, but it's from a child. It's really wonderful stuff. And then my wife got the other card, and she sent it from the dog. It's always fun to send something from a dog because our dog, maybe like yours if you have a dog too, he's very sweet. He's a perfect dog. He's the greatest doggy in the world, or as my wife likes to say, out dogs them all, and he's just great, but he's not a good speller. His Y's are always backwards. He's trying hard, and we love him to pieces, but he's just not a great speller. So there's a Y in his name, and it's always a little backwards, and that means the world, but that's a personal Father's Day. That was mine, but it just reminded me that of things my dad was. My parents have passed on now, and I loved them very much in life here, and I still love them very much. And I think we'll be together forever talking about all sorts of things. But my dad was a very, very sweet man, and he overreacted to the simple things in life, but it came off in such a sweet way. We'd be going, I remember one car trip on a Thanksgiving to my grandparents' house in Brooklyn, and we got in there. My dad's driving, my mom's next to him, my sister and I are in the back seat, and I guess we were, I don't know, 5 and 8 years old, or 8 and 11, something like that, and about 5 or 10 miles from our house on the way, suddenly out of nowhere, he just shouts, "Ooh! Did we bring the pies?" Now, that came out of nowhere. "Ooh, did we bring the pies?" And it was so large, it was so loud. "Ooh, did we bring the pies?" And we, frankly, were terrified. My mother, my sister, and I, by that volume and that inflection and that bending of the rhythm, "Ooh, did we bring the pies?" And I said to him, "Dad, you know, if a 747 is about to land on the roof of the car, that's when you say, ooh, that loud. That's when you say, ooh, ooh, there's a plane about to land on the roof of the car. Ooh." But we had a laugh that was just like him. He was very sweet. And the only time he ever really got overexpressive was when little things like that were happening. He was very sweet, very cool. I remember every single night when he and I, and it would just be the two of us, my mom would be in their bedroom already, and my sister would be in her bedroom, and my dad and I would sit and watch a little of the 11 o'clock news, maybe even sometimes a few minutes of the Tonight Show. And he would always finish whatever coffee was left from the dinner pot of coffee. Now, you know, life is different. There was a, my mom made a pot of coffee every night for dinner, and there was, it was a full pot of coffee. So by the end of the night, around 11, 11:15, my dad came with the classic Depression childhood of, you can't leave something like that left over. You can't just leave the coffee in the pot. What's going to happen the next day? What do you do? Throw it out? That was really an outrage. So he would drink whatever coffee was left as we would sit and talk and watch the news and maybe play a game of chess. And he would drink 4 huge mugs of black coffee, steaming black coffee. And I mean, these were huge mugs. These weren't just regular coffee mugs. These were the kind of mugs that you'd think they'd have in prisons somewhere. They were just immense. They were 16-ounce mugs of coffee, and he would drink and enjoy it, by the way. 4 of these, or more, 5 of these, and just sip it, black coffee, and drink it. And then, at around 11:40, after we watched Johnny Carson's monologue on The Tonight Show, well, it was time to go to bed, and he would go into his room and go out cold, right to sleep. Because Remember was before anyone had ever said, well, you can't drink coffee before you go to sleep. This was still like cowboy movie days where they're around the campfire. They come in from the cows. They're all dead tired. They have some food. And then they have, hey, you want some coffee? Sure, let's have some coffee. And then they'd have 2 or 3 of the same thing, 10 cups of coffee, and go right to sleep. So my dad, I remember, boy, it was just great. Every night we'd have those. And if someone had ever said to him, why are you drinking the coffee? He would just blink and look back and say, what are you talking about? It's sitting there. What are you going to do with it? Leave it? Throw it out the next day? And it was just a great memory to think of a guy that sweet who would do things like that. And it reminded me, he was a lawyer. He went to night school at Brooklyn Law School in the days when you didn't need a college degree to go to law school. He just had a year and a half of college before going in the service. And when he got out, those were also the days where when you get out, so now you're 19 or 20, so you meet someone, he met my mom, and you more or less get married in 3 months. And there was no great drama to it. If you really cared about someone and you loved each other, you just did that. But once they were married, he didn't have a job yet. Because that was also the times in American culture where you didn't meet someone and say, so what do you do for a living? Because there was nothing to do for a living, unless you were a doctor or something. And he was now studying. He had jobs that he would get selling fountain pens, and he was fine, and the family was fine. We had an apartment in Brooklyn, and it was very sweet, really. My mom, they had a kind of relationship where when he got home from work before going to law school, my mom would make him dinner, and she always made him a steak chop or a lamb chop. And it was just one because they didn't have a lot of money. And she made one for him with a baked potato or some French fries. And he said to her, well, aren't you going to have one? And she always said, oh, I had mine with the kids when we had dinner before. But that was a lie. She never did. She never had a chop like that. She always used the money to get him one. And she had before her dinner was a couple of slices of bread or whatever we left over. And that was fine for her. But that was something I always thought was a very loving thing to do at a different time in American life. And in fact, she helped him when he was studying for his bar examination. He went to, as I mentioned, the law school was at night, but you take the bar, same as everyone else. And he was studying in addition to the jobs he had. And, well, he had a family and an apartment in Brooklyn. And he was starting to study and study and study. But she said to him something I always thought was so smart. She said, why are you studying so much? And he said, well, it's the bar exam. I really have to do well on it in order to become a lawyer. And she said, you know what? You're a smart man, and you know all these things anyway. I think you know it all and everything you're supposed to know on this thing. Why don't you just forget about it and just take it when it comes up and take it easy and just go in there knowing you know what? You know it all. You don't have to overwork at this point in your life. Just go with what you have. And he thought that was so smart. He thought that it cut to the heart of the matter, and he did just that. And I remember I always thought when I heard that, my sister and I heard it, we thought that was some pretty good advice. And in fact, I'm offering it to you now. That's the same thing. You don't have to over-prepare for things if you've already done it. And if you're so busy with work and family and other things, you know what? I'll tell you the same thing my mom told my dad. You know all you need to know. Just go take it and don't worry about it. And you know what? He passed it. He passed it the first time. And that doesn't happen a lot anyway. But boy, oh boy, I think that was a good lesson of what a father does to try and do well for a family. What a father does when he decides, here are some choices I can make to try and make a living for the family now. And what a mother does with a father to keep everyone moving forward. And there's really nothing better about Father's Day I could think of than that kind of image. I hope if you are a father, you had a great Father's Day. I hope if you're going to be a father, you'll have great Father's Day too. But you know what? You couldn't do better than some of those good, simple stories that my parents went through, and I hope you get them. So, as always, remember, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. And that's still the truest thing I know. Happy Father's Day and happy Everything Day. And we'll see you here next time on LarryMillerPodcast.com. Now that the show's over, don't forget to sign up for your free trial of Hulu Plus and start watching your favorite hit shows right now. Go to HuluPlus.com/Larry for your extended free trial. Again, go to HuluPlus.com/Larry for your extended free trial.